I saw like 8 of them in a year, which was so weird. Yeah, around our school. I mean, that's that's really gross.
Hello and welcome to the Roast of Your Teenage Self podcast. I am your host, your roast coming queen, a girl who once broke up with her boyfriend because he told her he got a boner, Elise Morales. And with us today, guys, we have such an exciting episode. She is a stand-up. She is an actress. She is a literal icon. But before all of that, she was a graduate of the San Francisco School of the Arts. It's Margaret Cho.
Hi. Thank you.
Hello. Who do you have with you today?
This is Lucia Caterina Lawler Cho, her Korean name is Cho Ru Cha. So you can call her Cho Ru Cha, or you could call her Lucia Caterina. Either way, she really hates social media. So she's really always really anti streaming, podcasting, especially Instagram Live. She hates.
She doesn't. But so really, I'm really glad she's with us today.
She really is the FaceTime police. She really hates any kind of, no, but she doesn't mind Zoom for some reason. She's okay. Cool with Zoom. She just pooed over there. I see it. I can't smell it, but I can see it. And I'm like, oh, I see what you did. She just wants me to see it. So she's just sitting on me.
So but that's something you'll have to deal with at some point, I assume.
It's fine.
It'll be fine.
She's so small. It's fine.
She's small. She's tiny. All right. Well, Margaret, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. So, like I said right at the beginning, you went to San Francisco School of the Arts. I'm assuming, because I know this to be true, that's a performing arts high school.
Yes.
Did you have to audition to get into that high school?
Yes. It's one of those things. It's like the show fame, mm-hmm. that school and fame.
That's what so I was going to ask.
Audition to get in, and there are several parts of the school. You have the music part, the sort of singers. There's dancers, there's musicians, there's actors, of course, mm-hmm. there's visual arts. So it's a magnet school from mm-hmm. the public schools in San Francisco.
Got it. There was a school in my area like that, but for math and science, and you had to take the TJ test to get in. Mm-hmm. But it was a public school, but you had to like take a big fancy test, which I did not take because math and science is actually not my forte. When you're at this school, how was there like a hierarchy of like, well, the theater kids are on top and the band kids, that's social suicide to be the band kids? Or was it, did you hang out with each other?
No, the dancers were on top.
Okay.
The dancers were like on the social, because they were the most beautiful. I mean, the dancers were like, physically perfect, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't get better than the dancers were like just absolutely stunning people. You really couldn't get any better looking than these dancers were just marvelous. And then I think the actors were probably the second tier,
mm-hmm.
Because they were also like the most dorky, like all, and also the most outgoing,
yeah,
and scene steely kind of people. And also good looking. And then you probably had the band people, because the band people were also very charismatic, you know.
Yeah.
Like you had the kind of brooding piano players. I mean, the thing yeah. is that we didn't have like band, because band geeks were almost like people in band were the stereotype of people in band are from like regular schools. We're talking about like real virtuosos, like
yes.
people who are like really great musicians who are not necessarily geeky, because they're such good musicians that they sort of transcend the idea of like band geek and become like their own thing.
They're doing it because they actually have an aptitude for the instrument and not because they're like, I literally need to make friends and an excuse to finger people on a bus.
Yes. So it becomes like a calling as opposed to this sort of security blanket.
Yeah.
So I think it's sort of a different social construct than something that like is in a regular school. Although I don't know, like I think it depends, like what you use instruments for, and like because sometimes like people use like instruments, like it depends on what you use them for and what you play. Mm-hmm. There are certain instruments that are just cooler. Like we would really have a guy playing saxophone really well on the school, like the steps in the courtyard mm-hmm. when it was empty. I mean, it was so 80s. It was so ridiculous.
Yeah. And so I wonder, like, was it, how much like fame was it? Like how competitive, once you're in and you've gotten into this theater school, it seems, I mean, the theater at my high school was competitive and we were just like a random public school. So what was it like to be like competing with your peers on that level?
It really wasn't that competitive because everybody was, there weren't that many people. Mm-hmm. So there weren't that many, and there weren't that many, I think there weren't that many productions, there weren't that many people, there weren't that many things that were happening that we were competing for. So everybody kind of got a turn to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it didn't feel as if you were in a high pressure situation. Mm-hmm. At least it didn't seem to me to be like that, you know, or like, you know, the kind of feelings that were going on had more to do with just like regular teenage angst. And it wasn't, I think that like that sort of feeling of like fame costs, and this is when you start paying and sweat, had more to do with the reality of like a dance career would have on a young person and their body, you know, the reality of a dance career of a young person, you know, that's true. I mean, a dance career is very difficult for people in their bodies. And just like a music career is difficult for people in their bodies. I think an acting career is not really the same. I mean, it is, I think in, if you're talking about like a young ingenue in a movie, but for like for somebody like myself, I always thought, oh, like my thing is like I know, like, because I'm not white, I'm not necessarily an ingenue, I probably will end up playing character roles for the rest of my life. I think I'll probably have an enduring lifetime playing like a judge in everything. I'm gonna be the judge in every. I've actually not really even ever played a judge, but I bet I will at some point. But I thought I was like,
put it out in the universe. Let's get Margaret as a judge.
I'll be a judge in everything. I would actually love to be a judge in something now, but I would love to be in the Supreme Court now. Actually, in for real.
Oh, actually, that would be fantastic.
That'd be really really great. But the idea of like. You know, the short life of an artist is really more of, I think, geared towards dancers than anything. And it's kind of almost a construct in the drama of a chorus line or Staying Alive.
Yes.
Those kinds of movies.
So we actually have a screenshot from a documentary about your high school that I wanted to pull up that you are featured in. So here you are. Yes. You're a junior in theater. You say your goal is that you want it all.
Yes.
Which I love the confidence.
Yes. And but with the short boot, which I probably would not wear that, but and a legging. I actually like that shirt.
The shirt I was about to say, the shirt and the headband I like.
It's very fashion forward for the 80s. And because it's actually projecting the 90s. It's paisley. Mm-hmm. And but the boot, I was like, what is that? It's kind of brown. I don't know. But I'm with Sam Rockwell, who has Oscars.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't even compute that. So were you, I know Aisha Tyler went to your high school as well. Yep. Is that correct?
Aisha Tyler. So, she's in that class too, but she was the narrator of the documentary. So she's actually the host of the documentary, and she comes forward later. Mm-hmm. But Sam and I would end up going to comedy clubs and doing comedy sketches together. He was my first comedy partner.
Amazing.
In school. But yeah, he's great.
Is this a picture from a play or a show or something? It seems like you're on stage. No.
Well, we did a lot of like sketchy comedy things. We were in a comedy troupe. So we would do these things. But I love that font.
Yes. It's a very
inchworm font. It's real like 70s, but I don't know if it's supposed to be retro. I think it was supposed to be modern at the time, maybe.
It was coming back. The font was making a resurgence. So you're saying, did you get into comedy via this high school, or was it something you were already interested in? Okay, cool. So talk me through that journey.
So I had a teacher, we all had a teacher who was very proactive in signing us up for comedy nights at this comedy club called The Other Cafe, which was a very famous club in San Francisco that had shows. They would do shows with Paula Poundstone and Dana Carvey, and Robin Williams would perform there, all these famous comedians. And she would sign us up for the open mics. So Sam and I would go and perform there at the open mic. And we were very young. We were probably like 14, 15. Mm-hmm. And it was really like inappropriate. Now I think back on it, and I'm like, that's really inappropriate. But I'm glad she did that.
Yes.
Because it's really great, actually. Because, you know, it sort of gave me an into this world of comedy. And then Sam ended up moving to New York with his mom. But I stuck with it because I really loved it. And I fell for this whole lifestyle of doing comedy at night. And it really gave me a place to go. Like, I really felt like this is the world that I belonged in, which was true.
Do you remember any of your early bits or what they were about?
It was really about being there, like, I didn't belong there, which is also true. Like, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm really a kid. And, you know, and that's really right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that, and also the inappropriate things that people were saying to me. Like these old men, like, was just gross. Like, but also like the protective nature that would come out with these people, and kind of that feeling of like, this is very strange. Like, I'm here with people that are older than my parents. And like, also that thing of not being like anybody else there, but also kind of feeling belonging there. So there was a lot of different things happening that I was kind of processing while I was there. And so I think that was, in a way, the right thing to be doing, talking about that.
Very cool. So did you start out high school at the performing arts school, or did you come there later?
I came there later. I was at another magnet high school called a Lowell High School, which was a math and science school.
Okay.
So I went there first, and then I went to School of the Arts later.
So what made you make that switch?
I had to leave the Lowell because I got kicked out for not going to class because I hated it. I kept cutting, and then I got kicked out because I was like, it was such a valuable school, like you know, there were so many people trying to get into that school, and I was just like not, and it's a public school. So I was like not valued, that I was not valued place there. So I got kicked out.
how did you end up at the math and science school first? Was that like something your parents wanted for you, or were you just kind of like, I guess I'll go here?
Well, I had really good grades in junior high. And so it was just the thing of like, that's what you do, you know, when you mm-hmm. have a high sort of like the everything, like when you're an Asian American kid and everything is like college prep, there's yes. no like elementary school or high school, everything is like college prep, which is like, to me, it's like, I don't even understand like what that is about. Like, you know, mm-hmm. It's there's no sense of childhood or no sense of like innocence. Everything is about college prep, which is like, why are you trying to like advance adulthood so quickly?
I know.
It's really sad. So to me, that just seemed really unimportant. I mean, it was important when I was a really young kid, but then mm-hmm. when I became like a teenager, then I was just like really rebellious against it. Like, I didn't want to do that. Like, I wanted to be an artist. And so that's really when I decided to like kind of rebel and not go mm-hmm. to class and not go, because I didn't know how to flunk out except to just not go.
I mean, that's a great, you were right. you nailed it. Like,
I think so. But that was really hard for my family to accept. I mean, I think that, you know, they're still upset about it, which I think is like also dumb to not like, be like, like, I think that they're like, you know, they're still like kind of disappointed, but I don't know exactly, I don't know exactly how much better it could have turned out. I feel like it's
yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like at this point you've justified going to the performing arts high school.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Today's episode of the Roast of Your Teenage Self podcast is brought to you by Mint Mobile, honey. Breaking up with your old wireless provider just got a whole lot easier thanks to Mint Mobile. They were the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, and now Mint Mobile is introducing their unlimited data plan for just $30 a month. Let that sink in. An unlimited plan for $30. How much is your soon-to-be ex wireless provider charging you? I bet more. For people who hate their phone bill and are ready to cut ties with big wireless, Mint Mobile offers their premium unlimited plan for just $30 a month. And if you're someone who loves your phone bill, I don't know, examine that. I don't know what that's about. By going online only and eliminating the traditional costs of retail, Mint Mobile passes significant savings on to you. All plans come with an unlimited talk and text and high-speed internet delivered on the nation's largest 5G. Network. We love that 5G. We love that 5G. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts, so you don't have to do that weird thing where you're like, I have a new number, and then like, I don't know. That's exhausting. You won't have to do that. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with a 7-day money-back guarantee. Break up with big wireless and switch to Mint Mobile's unlimited data plan. For $30 a month to get your new unlimited wireless plan for just $30 a month and get the plan shipped to your door free. Go to mintmobile.com/teenself. That's mintmobile.com/teenself. Cut your wireless bill to $30 a month at mintmobile.com/teenself. Hello, everyone. Today's episode of the Roast of Your Teenage Self podcast is brought to you by Candid. You know, all the things we'd love to do for ourselves but haven't done for whatever reason. For me, I always wanted straighter teeth and a better smile. Obviously, my smile is extremely gorgeous. All of you who watch on the YouTube are captivated daily by it because you watch it daily. But I've wanted to make it better, and I'm done putting it off. Thanks to Candid, straightening my teeth is simpler and easier and more comfortable than ever. Candid clear aligners are comfortable, removable, and practically invisible, unlike wire braces, so you can transform your smile without anyone noticing. Plus, your treatment is prescribed and monitored remotely by a licensed orthodontist who's an expert on tooth movement. And it's all done from the comfort and convenience of your own home. Candid only works with orthodontists, never general dentists like other companies. Not going to name them, but the other ones, they work with dentists. Candid, not so much. Plus, your supervising orthodontist will be with you every step of the way. With Candid, your treatment includes more remote monitoring by the same orthodontist who created your plan. So you never have to wonder how you're doing. You'll always know. I love that. I love to know. The average Candid treatment is just 6 months. You'll start seeing results way before then, and it costs thousands less than braces. Yes, thousands. Start straightening your teeth today. Right now, all my listeners can save $75 on Candid's starter kit. Go to candidco.com/teenself and use code teenself. That's candidco.com/teenself, code teenself. Take advantage of this limited time offer and save $75 on your starter kit. candidco.com/teenself, code teenself. See, this smile is actually going to improve soon because of Candid.
But it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to, I think that they're like, I think Korean people are so, they're so trained to react to this idea of like education as being the future because of Korea, the way that Korea is and the way that the education system is and how you have to really like be in the education system in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. They sort of think that that's the way in America too.
The same way here.
Yeah.
So how quickly after getting to the first high school did you look around and be like, oh shit, this isn't for me?
Oh, it took about a year. And then I was just like, I don't want to do this. Like, I was like, this is so gross. And we also had a huge amount of sexual predators at our school, not in the school, but at around the school. Like, for some reason, there was like a huge amount of like weird, it was like the 80s. So there was like a lot of flashers. Like there was like a lot oh of like God. Guys like driving around in like convertibles, like with like trench coats. Like it was like super gross, like weird, like flasher culture.
So your high school was surrounded by flashers.
Yeah, by these weird men who were, I mean, it was like, I saw like 8 of them in a year, which was so
penises?
Weird. Yeah, around our school. I mean, that's really gross.
That would have been extremely shocking to me. I mean, like I said at the top of the pod, I broke up with a boy because he told me he got a boner. And I was like, I did not sign up for that at all.
But it's so weird, like, to think about how many times, and it was just, like, you have, like, your trapper keeper, and, like, your peachy, and then you're, like, I had to, like, do this so many, like, cover up my face so many times to, like, shield myself from, like, the penises, and it's such a weird thing to, like, just be, like, oh, like, why are we doing this, and, There was just so much of that. And it was just such a weird time to like kind of feel like, why is this school like so, or so much of, why is this a problem at the school? And also there was just, I mean, the culture of the school was just so much about academic, like excellence. We have to like be like, we have to excel. And all of it was so much forward thinking about like, what college are you going to go to? What university? It wasn't college, it was university. What university? And it was all Ivy League. And if you're not in Ivy League, then the only other option is Stanford. And if Stanford was like a step down, and it was like, what universe are we, you know, like that's too much pressure to be under. I couldn't do it.
Okay. Going back to the penises for one second.
yes.
Did the school address this with you at all? Or were they just like, we're talking about college and whatever you saw on your way to get here, leave it at the door, Margaret.
No. That was just something that you just sort of dealt with. Like, it was just another thing that was part of, you just dealt with it. Like, it was just like part of your life. Like, it was just, oh, that's just the reality of being a kid in the 80s, you know?
That is so wild to me. Okay. You're skipping school at this point. What would you do when you were skipping? Like, where would you go?
Oh, we would go, like, it was actually me and a bunch of other kids at our school. Like, it was like not just me that was rebelling against this school. It was like a bunch of kids at that school. You know, because it was kind of a trend of like a lot of us were losing faith in that sort of system of, so it was a lot of Asian American kids who were just like, I'm not doing this. So it was like a bunch of us who were like, this is bullshit, and losing the idea of like, I can't endure it, and I can't be part of this. And then everybody sort of like went their own way, whether it was going and buying alcohol at like some weird like liquor store that would sell to like 14-year-olds, or like going to punk rock shows at night, or you know, dyeing your hair, or you know, whatever it was, there was like some kind of like rebellion that you're pursuing. Mm-hmm. Everybody had their own form of it.
And so when the expulsion finally happens, I'm assuming your parents didn't take it well, but what was the transition like from like you get expelled to then you move to the performing arts high school? Did you decide right away, or was there kind of like a weird in between time?
No, I decided pretty much like during the expulsion period. Like, I decided before I got expelled that I was going to go there, and then I started preparing for going there. Mm-hmm. Like, I started to like prepare for my audition and deciding, like, I think I decided before I was expelled even that I was going to go. Mm-hmm. And then I was like preparing like to audition and preparing to get an agent. Actually, I was trying to like get an agent to go to start to go to like castings for modeling and for a commercial agent. And like, I was starting to like try to be to get like commercial work and stuff, like professional stuff, like headshots and all this stuff. Like, I was trying to like do teen catalog modeling and trying to do like all this stuff. Like, I was trying to be very like ambitious and trying to do that kind of stuff. So there was this burst of activity where I became very independent, and I was trying to like do things of like, oh, I'm going to be like a child star, but I'm not going to have my parents do it. I'm going to do it myself. So there was this thing of like, I got very sort of ambitious and started doing things on my own. And that was really, I think, what was really exciting, because I was like becoming very sort of motivated to do that. But I started to like memorize monologues out of these like audition books, and you know, decide of what I was going to do for like these auditions, and so that kind of thing.
That's super interesting, because to me the act of doing that, to be like, I'm gonna be an actress, I'm actually gonna be a model, I'm actually gonna be a child star, there's so much like confidence and self-assuredness in that that is unique for a teenager. Were you confident or self-assured in other parts of your life, or was it just like, no, I'm going to be a famous person, but I'm so nervous talking to anyone I have a crush on?
Yeah. I mean, I knew that I could probably do that. Like, I think, I don't know like why I thought I could do that. Like, I just thought like, I guess there was a couple of jobs that I got that like early on that made me feel like, oh, this is like possible. I don't know what it was. There was just something about it that there was a couple of jobs that were really big that I got that were like I remember I got like this job that was like extra work that was so it was so meaningless, but it was like, but this was like in the 80s, but it was for $4,000. And it was like, I was like, oh my God, but it was extra work.
Yeah.
but it was still like, it was like, that's a lot of money in the 80s. And it was only, it was like featured extra like thing. And then I was like, I did another extra job. This was a little bit later on. It was in a movie. And it was for, it was kind of, I think I got cut out, but it was kind of a, it was in a scene with Julia Roberts.
Oh my God.
Called Forever Young with a director who just died, Joel Schumacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on Clement Street. It was in San Francisco. And he had specifically cast me in it. So it was kind of like this thing of like, it was like this whole thing where I was in stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I specifically cast in things. So this was a little bit later on, but there was this confidence that came forward. So even if I wasn't speaking in roles or I was still able to get jobs that were like kind of legit, even mm-hmm. though I wasn't like an actress yet.
You were getting just enough encouragement that was like, you got to keep going. Like you got to keep moving and rolling along. Very cool. Okay. During this time, are you dating at all? Do you have, I mean, I'm assuming you have crushes. I know.
Oh yeah.
I know you're bisexual. So did you have crushes on girls at that time? Were you in tune with that part of yourself?
Yeah. I think that I was probably much more of, I had a boyfriend when I was 15, but he was very, I feel like he was more feminine. Mm-hmm. I definitely had sort of more of a connection with people who were maybe, I guess in the 80s, they would be non-binary.
Got it.
But then they didn't have that sort of moniker.
Language,
you know?
Yeah.
You didn't have that. So now I see them as sort of more like gender fluid or non-binary, but back then they didn't have that sort of like title. I think, and then in the 90s, I was definitely very like lesbian and like real angry about it. That to me is much more embarrassing as to being like angry lesbian. Because when you get like those long jean shorts and then you won't stop coming out, like you won't stop, like I was like, get like really long bike shorts, like jean shorts and like a big bike chain with like big blinks and like I wouldn't take it off. A really like big messenger bag. So I always had like stuff like hanging off of my body, like really heavy things.
Yeah.
It's like very, very like when you're like wearing a lot of heavy stuff and you're like a lesbian, like you're really angry about it.
And so you're like, I'm like a strong lesbian and I carry my clothes with me.
Yeah. And you won't take off your boots. It's like really heavy. It's so annoying. It's like a really heavy, like weighted down.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't like it.
So when you were in high school in the 80s, there's obviously no language about being non-binary, but what was your understanding of your sexuality at that time? Were you like, oh my God, I'm bisexual? Or were you just like, I don't know, girls kind of make me feel a way, but I always do too. Like,
it was weird. Like, I remember that there was this boy that would come to school all the time and he would dress like Madonna. And I would be like, wanting to talk to him and ask him like, what is going on? Like what? And because people would always hassle him, mm-hmm. but I wanted to ask him about it, but I also didn't want him to be like hassling him because I didn't want him to perceive it as me hassling him.
Yeah. You were like, I genuinely am curious about the Madonna.
Yeah. I wanted in on it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to dress like Madonna too, but I also wanted to be a part of what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like this thing of like, I want in on this identity, but I also don't want to hassle you. I don't want to be perceived as being like an assault on you because I know that this is an assaultive position because all you know is this sort of assault on your being. There was another guy who would dress as Prince all the time.
Okay.
So And then I didn't understand how come, like, the guy that dresses like Madonna is getting hassled, but the guy that dresses like Prince is not getting hassled because they look exactly the same.
That's very true. And also, there's a really high, I mean, I guess it's a performing arts high school, so I shouldn't be surprised, but it feels like a lot of work to dress like a pop star every day.
Yeah. And but they're like, the only thing that puts, like, the guy dressed like Madonna and the guy dressed like Prince apart is the guy dressed like Prince has more lace.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, the guy dressed like Prince has, like, a full lace ruff, where the guy dressed like Madonna doesn't have a lace ruff. Like,
yeah, just a tasteful bustier.
Yeah, it's, like, the weirdest thing of, like, why is the, you know, it's, like, the guy dressed like Prince has even more of sort of a Louis XIV, like, even mm-hmm. more flamboyant thing. Like, it's a very strange kind of thing of, like, what is feminine and what is masculine and what, where does this divide come? And when the feminine is actually, quote unquote, more masculine.
Yes.
So it's weird.
No, that's really interesting. And it makes sense to me that you were drawn to the Madonna kid, because it's like, here's this person who's kind of being very openly queer at a time when I imagine that wasn't happening a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you said that people hassled him, but do you feel like at the performing arts high school there was maybe a little more room for people to be openly gay, or was that just really not happening?
I think there was and then there wasn't. I think because it was the performing arts school, there was more queerness on display, but because it was youth, there was a lot more insecurity about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot more defensiveness around it, you know, like,
yes.
There was a lot more of, like, people, like, really, very, defensive, and very, there was some homophobic violence, there was a lot of, like, crazy shit, mm-hmm. like, things going on that were really unpleasant underneath mm-hmm. it, because I think that there was stuff that was, like, kind of, I think, uncomfortable because there was so much happening underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're really, like, around a lot of, like, young people, like, the sort of, like, thing of, like, we're, because it wasn't like Harvey Milk High School, where everybody is, like, openly queer and, like, we're, like, here as a safe haven.
Yes.
Because this is, like, the 80s, where it wasn't necessarily, like, okay to be gay. Even San Francisco, people think, oh, well, it's, like, a queer city. But San Francisco has a real conservative undercurrent, even though it's, like, a, you know, supposedly this sort of, like, very, like, Sodom by the Sea. It's
yeah.
really not. I wish it was.
It's actually just one kid dressed as Madonna and everyone
yeah.
else is, like, normal.
Kids by nature are very fearful and very mm-hmm. like conservative in a lot of ways, you know, and
yes.
That sort of doesn't go away in even, like, the artistic kids. Like, there's a streak of, like, you know, they hate the tall poppy. Like, they, you know, like, kids that stand out. They
tall poppy's, like, got to be cut down. That, like,
cut down the tall poppy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, a very, it's a very strange thing, especially, like, when you put all the artistic kids together. You know, there's jealousy and there's anger, and, you know, you want to, like, strike down the exceptional ones.
Yeah, and especially when it's kind of a school full of already exceptional kids who are already right. dedicated to this really difficult career path in the arts. I imagine mm-hmm. that, like, anything that makes you stick out, it's like, I don't want to
yeah.
have anything to do with that. So seeing all this, saying, you know, that you were seeing homophobia, you said there was homophobic violence and things around you, did you feel comfortable pursuing anything with girls, or
not
that,
until,
like,
I left mm-hmm. not until I left. I mean, not until I was much older. I think not until I was, like, in my late teens, like, I didn't really pursue that until I was like 19, until I left school. I mean, there was nothing like that until I was much older, because it was just not safe at school to want to be around that, or to want to be in a sense of like, of like, oh, being in a relationship at school, or even with anybody at school, you know, because it was just so like creepy and weird. And also, I didn't like anybody at school, and it was just like not just like weird, creepy, like drama kids. So no.
So you said, I mean, you said that you did have a boyfriend. So when it came to like boys and stuff, were you, did you date them for like a long time, or was it just little flings?
I had one boyfriend. So he and I dated for like a couple of years, and then he had cats, named Prince and Madonna.
Wow. Was it related to the kids who dressed as Prince and Madonna? Or just
no, they weren't related to the kids. They were separate. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just the times. And then he was very androgynous. Mm-hmm. And he had very long hair, and he wore a belt in his hair at the prom. I just remember that. He wore like, I had like one of those like very large, like big wide belts, you know, those like mm-hmm. big wide 80s belts. And then I took it off and he put it in his hair. I remember at the prom, that was a thing. I think we ended up going to, we went to the prom. We went out for a couple of years. He actually came over not that long ago. He moved to Ireland.
Oh, wow.
I saw him not that long ago. He has children. He moved to Ireland. But he's a great guy, but he's not as androgynous now. Mm-hmm. He's male now, but back then he was very girlish. Mm-hmm. But it's a I think that I didn't really become sort of. I sort of identified more as a lesbian later. I think I had a lot of lesbian feelings, but I didn't identify more as a lesbian until I was like 19.
Mm-hmm. And then do you think you like kind of swung into the angry lesbian heavy clothes phase because you had were like, I did the straight thing, now I want to go fully this, like I want to go all in on
ladies. I think it was like I think from 19 to 20 I was very lesbian, and then I was like tired of it, and then I was like 21 22 20 then I was like very then I went through like this weird like CK1 phase where it was like very like androgyny. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, this isn't good. Because it was like more like style phases mm-hmm. than it was really sexuality. So it had more to do with fashion than I think real feelings.
I mean, listen, I made a lot of fashion choices in my youth as well. I was like an emo kid, so I was like a little punk.
Oh, yeah.
With all my little like hot topic.
That's cool.
Get ups and dyeing my hair and stuff. That was like my form of rebellion. Okay, so we're coming towards the end here. One question I wanted to ask you, you know, you've been really honest about a lot of difficulties you went through during this time with like bullying and all different things like that. Did you have like an album or a show or something that you used as your like escape mechanism when things got bad or crazy?
I think everything. I mean, I think like Cyndi Lauper for sure. Mm-hmm. Cyndi Lauper was always really a great person to, you know, like turn off to, or she was, her music was always really a good friend, and later she became a friend, which is awesome.
That's
too.
That's so cool.
which is super cool. But her music and her energy was really inspiring as somebody that was such an oddball who became an icon. Mm-hmm. You know, that you could really survive being a weirdo and thrive from it, you know. So she was a real sort of a lesson in being yourself and really becoming something magnificent because of it, you know, because somebody's so unique who was so special, who was absolutely just once in a lifetime kind of creature, once in a millennia kind of creature, who just became like this role model, really, you know, like, again, like her album, She's So Unusual, was really like something like really moved me and changed me and really made me believe that you could really survive this and you could really like grow up and be okay. And I think that she really is a symbol for all of us, like all of us weirdos, that, you know, we could like survive it. And I think that, you know, like she really, you know, like her music and her voice and her image really was an enduring sort of metaphor and example of survival. Yeah, I think she was really, probably really pivotal for me. If anybody, I would say her, Joan Jett also. Somebody who was like about power and strength and, you know, just that kind of like female empowerment, you know, that through all of that, I think she was just almost like a knight in shining armor, that kind of like shining leather kind of image. She's perfect. So yeah, those two women, I think really are really important to my image, you know, to, to who I become and, you know, and also good friends now, which is great.
So cool. Okay. Three more questions. One, if you had to dress as either Joan Jett or Cyndi Lauper for school every day, which one would you choose?
I think Joan Jett. Joan Jett is really, I mean, although I do love Cyndi. Cyndi has great style.
It's, it's two very different looks.
But Cyndi, you have to put on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
With Cyndi, it's actually very, it's quite curated. Cyndi, it's like, you, it's very careful. It's not just a bunch of things. It's like, Cyndi went to art school, so it's like, it's quite difficult to get the balance right, you know? It's like, it's in the eye. Yeah. It's really careful.
And you're waking up so early to get to school. It's hard to put together a full Cyndi Lauper every day. So I would probably also go Joan Jett just because it's easier to maintain.
Joan Jett, it's like you roll out of bed. Joan Jett, it's kind of like, you're just cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Joan Jett, all you have to do is get like one jacket and you're like, I'm Joan Jett every day.
And Converse and it's the, Joan Jett, it's like the haircut.
Yes.
And it's like the eyeliner and it's a leather jacket and jeans. It's just like, it's just being perfect. And Cyndi, it's like it's like a different kind of perfection, but they're both cool.
Yes. Now, when you are in a situation where you're meeting your, you know, idols from high school and becoming friends with them, do you ever, because I have this sometimes now that I'm in comedy and I get to be on Zoom chats with people like you and stuff, do you ever feel your high school self like being like, oh my God, I can't believe it? Or like, do you feel yourself making your high school self proud ever?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like I get very excited and I get really, I mean, I always, you know, I'm really grateful, you know, and I definitely, you know, get very enchanted and, you know, I'm thrilled about stuff and, you know, I'm real, I want to tell them and that, you know, I'm always very encouraged and, you know, elated about it. It's like very, it's a really important thing. So yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Margaret, this has been amazing. We always end the show with one final question, which is if you could tell teen Margaret anything, what would you tell her?
It's all going to be great.
You literally nailed it.
Yes.
The Performing Arts High School is going to work out amazing.
It's going to be amazing.
That's awesome. Well, Margaret, it's been a thrill to talk to you. You were a wonderful guest. And for everybody at home, this has been the Roast of Your Teenage Self podcast.